Who knew that it was so difficult to sing with a mask on? Take a deep breath between phrases. Suck in your mask. Hello to our visitors. We have, I don't know what the attraction was here today. Must be Ken. We've got visitors from Chicago and Cincinnati. Welcome. Hello, thousands at home. Viewing through the internet. I want to talk about Matthew 16 today. In Matthew 16, and only in Matthew, Christ says something very important about you and me and the whole church. It's a prediction, sort of. It goes to the core, I think, of the gospel message. Matthew 16 is where Jesus led his disciples to the very northern edge of Judea, up near Mount Hermon, and up there where there are the sources of the Jordan River. Verse 13 of Matthew 16 says Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi. It's quite a ways out of the beaten path to go way up there. It's probably about 25 miles north of the Sea of Galilee. But it's there, at Caesarea Philippi, that Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do men say that I am?" And Simon Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus confirms that Peter is correct. And then he declares something that is not repeated elsewhere in the Bible, in no other gospel. In verse 18, he says, "I will build my church." And he adds, "And the gates of Hades," or hell, "will not prevail against it." What is Christ referring to as the gates of Hades? That's what I'd like to consider for this few minutes this afternoon. The setting of the story is important to his words here, I think. Jesus had just led them to this very special, very out-of-the-way place, and then makes this unique statement. And I think it's no coincidence. You know, the unique place, the unique statement are related to one another. The setting, I said, is at the headwaters of the Jordan River, Caesarea Philippi. It's at the foot of the 7,300-foot snow-capped Mount Hermon. And it has a special geology there. There's a cliff there about 50 feet tall. And at the foot of the cliff is a cave. And in the cave, there's a very deep spring. In the first century, Josephus wrote that it was so deep that no man had ever found a rope deep enough to find the bottom of this spring. And the water gushed out of this spring. It's one of the four sources of the Jordan River. It's a very pretty place, especially for the Near East. It's very green. It's probably, likely is, the place of Dan. Remember the northernmost point of Israel? The city of Dan. But in the 3rd century B.C., when the Greek Macedonian Empire invaded, it drew the attention of the Syrian Greeks, probably because it's at the foot of Mount Hermon. So it's not all Israeli up there or Judean up there. The Syrian influence is very strong because it's only 40 miles from Damascus. Mount Hermon is like the Mount Olympus of the Near East. It's known as the Rock of the Gods because of so many shrines built around it, pagan shrines. And at that spring in Caesarea Philippi sat a temple of Pan. For maybe a couple hundred years before Christ, it was called Panias, after the name Pan. And there was a belief that the grotto there, that the cave at the bottom of that cliff, was sacred to the god Pan. In fact, that place is named for Pan to this very day. Although nowadays it's called Banias because there's no P in Arabic, so it's Banias. But its original name is Panias after the god Pan. But when the Romans conquered the whole region in the first century B.C., Caesar Augustus gave the area of Panias to Herod the Great. Herod built a city there around the shrine to Pan. And then in 19 BC, he built a temple to Caesar Augustus. He named the temple the Augustium in honor of the man who had given him this territory. And then after Herod died, just before AD times, his kingdom was split up to his three sons. And that area north of Galilee was given to Philip, one of his sons, who reigned over it from 4 BC to 34 AD. So right during the life of Christ, parallels the life of Christ almost exactly, Philip made his capital, in fact, at Panias. And Philip built up the city of Panias and made it larger, more beautiful. He changed the name of it at that time to Caesarea in honor of Caesar Augustus, Philippi in honor of himself. But it also distinguished that Caesarea from the Caesarea on the coast. So that's how it came to be known, Caesarea Philippi, when Christ visited there in Matthew 16. Now, the god Pan in Greek mythology was a satyr. Satyr is a god who's half man and half goat. It's a very old concept. Appears in the Old Testament as well, not to offer sacrifices to the satyrs. But he was the god in the pagan view of wild places and was usually worshipped in caves. And hence the association of that cave at the foot of that cliff with the god Pan. But what does Pan have to do with the gates of hell? In mythology, Pan was the son of Hermes, or Mercury, who's called in Latin, to the Romans. And Hermes was the messenger of the gods, but besides that, he was the conductor of souls to the underworld. The conductor of the souls to the underworld. He was not the god of the underworld. Hermes was not. That was his uncle, Hades. But the cave at Panias, then, was not only a temple to Pan, but because of the deep hole there, they considered it an entry to the underworld. To the kingdom of Hades. And it's no coincidence, I think, that this is the place where Jesus declares, "I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it." It was a very pagan place. And Jesus certainly didn't go there to Caesarea Philippi to visit the pagan temples, of course. But he went out of his way to be there, and that's why he has to say what he has to say here in answer to the pagan ideas associated with that place. That is, to the mind of the people who were steeped in that Greek mythology and religion, Hades was a fearful place. The Greeks believed in the immortal soul. And they were fearful of what their state would be when their soul was taken down to Hades. And Jesus was speaking to that fear. In that view, as Hades being the underworld, the gates of Hades therefore were not defensive. They were not city gates. No, they didn't prevail because they kept people out. Nobody wanted to get in to Hades. The gates were prison gates. They prevailed by keeping people in Greek view. In the Greek view, once you were in Hades' kingdom, you could not get out. John uses that same imagery in the book of Revelation. First chapter, I'll just quote you a snippet from Revelation 1, verses 17 and 18, says, John wrote, "Do not be afraid." This is quoting Jesus Christ. "I am the first and the last and the one who lives. I was dead, but look, now I am alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and of Hades." He holds the keys to the prison gate, the keys that will let you out. So here, like in Matthew, Jesus is saying that the gates cannot hold you. He will overcome those gates. And it's the same idea that's presented elsewhere in the New Testament. For example, Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14 and 15. I'm quoting here from the NET Bible. The NET Bible puts it, "Therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he," that is Jesus Christ, "he shared in their humanity, so that through death he could destroy the one who holds the power of death. That is the devil, not Hades, but the devil. And set free those who are held in slavery all their lives by their fear of death. Now, the pagan Greeks were terrified by the prospect of death and the underworld. And remember that the New Testament was written to Greeks. It was written in Greek. The three synoptic gospels weren't written until about 60 AD. By that time, the church was growing in the Hellenized Roman Empire. These are addressed to the Greeks and the Hellenized Christians of Paul's territory. The records that these gospels may have come from might have been older. They might have come from the Jerusalem church. But the words and the examples that were drawn from those records often address Greek ideas and Greek fears. For example, the story of Lazarus and the rich man. Now, that's kind of a strange story, isn't it, from a biblical perspective. It's in Luke chapter 16. I'll just quote a couple of verses just to remind you of what it says there, that the rich, this is Luke 16:22, the rich man died and was buried, and in hell, that is in Hades, he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, and sees Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Obviously, Jesus is not endorsing the Greek idea of an underworld ruled by Hades, but those words, this example, was chosen to address a great fear and an ignorance of the Hellenized world about the fate of the wicked or the greedy. He's using that Greek fear of the underworld, and when he finishes the parable, he finishes it with a statement of how God has made the truth plain for all men. Verse 31. The truth is made plain in Scripture, he says. If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. The fear of Hades is not a biblical perspective, but it's a Greek perspective. Both the Greeks and the Hellenized Jews would be familiar with that dread of death. But the Scriptures create a foundation for a promise that was laid in Moses and the prophets, the original tree of life in Genesis, the promises of the seed of Abraham who would be a blessing to all mankind. But it was also a mystery, wasn't it? For a millennium and a half, it was a great mystery how this could be done. How can mortal man escape death? From the Greek perspective, it would be, how could mortal man escape from the underworld, from the grave, which they envisioned as the kingdom of Hades? And Christ was saying that it was going to be shortly be demonstrated how that escape can be done. Paul speaks in those same words, the same idea, same figure of speech, you might say, in Ephesians chapter 4. Couple of verses here. Ephesians 4, 8 through 10. Paul writes, wherefore he, and he's quoting the psalm here, the psalmist from Psalm 68. Wherefore he says, having ascended up on high, he has led captivity captive and has given gifts to men. Christ, in other words, was captive in the tomb. Death was the prison in this figure of speech. But this resurrection was a triumph over the capturer. He led the capturer captive. Verse 9. Now, what is the meaning of he ascended? Except that he also descended to the lower regions, namely the earth. He descended to Hades in the Greek point of view. Verse 10. He, the very one who descended, is also the one who ascended above all the heavens in order to fill all things. So, like him who led captivity captive and conquered the grave, the gates of Hades cannot prevail over those who follow Jesus Christ out of the grave. Jesus Christ builds an assembly of those who follow him, and the grave, he says, cannot hold them. So, I will build my church, and the gates of hell, gates of Hades, will not prevail against it. It goes to the very heart of the gospel message. He will let the captives go free. He will end the fear of death, and he will end death itself. He takes death captive. The church cannot be held by death. The gates of Hades will not prevail.